We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy hump day to you. And it is a Wednesday, October 23rd edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Creeping, crawling closer to LSU Auburn and plenty more. With you on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And we're live inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. LSU Auburn, it's a pretty big deal. High school football, just about everyone moving up from Friday to Thursday night. Hey, that's a big deal too. But we'll keep it strictly professional as we open our program today. Professional sports, that is. Let's begin with the New Orleans Saints, and then I'll touch on the Stros. Game one loss to the Nats in the 2019 World Series. We got time for you to join the party as well. 706-0111. And this is hot off the presses. Within the last 25 to 30 minutes, Drew Brees met with reporters, Airline Drive in Metairie. I don't know if anybody summed it up as well as our guy Jeff Duncan with The Athletic. Typically, people don't sum it up as well as Jeff. Here's how he paraphrased the way that the Brees presser went. The media asked, "Are you going to play this week?" Brees responded, "That's the plan. We'll see." The media responded to him, "What's going to determine this decision?" Brees answered, "Just making sure that I could be me." And the final question from the media to Drew Brees, "And how will this decision be made?" Brees, "I'll tell Sean. And he'll believe me." Okay, then. And so for all scoring at home, it sounds like many right now in the Big Easy completely disagree with our assertion yesterday. And we basically all collectively, not just me and Clint, but all of YPU people out there in listener and Twitter and Facebook response land, collectively, we all screamed as loud as we could, "Don't play Drew this Sunday," as the Arizona Cardinals are coming to town. Yes, the Cardinals with Kyler Murray are not god-awful. So I understand this isn't like playing Washington or Miami. This isn't the bottom of the barrel that's coming to town. It's a little bit better than that. But I think so far, Teddy Bridgewater has shown he's a little better than most of us gave credit for. And at least this team without Brees may be a lot better than we gave credit. And so your latest update from the Crescent City, Brees angling toward playing, and says, "I'll tell Sean. Sean will believe me." I guess nowhere in between the two will the medical staff intervene. And yet there's always that possibility that this is gamesmanship, that this is forcing the Cardinals' hand to have to prepare for the Saints with Brees on offense, or maybe some combination of Brees and Bridgewater. We had a great text to the program yesterday. Drew suggested just that. Maybe this is forcing Arizona to have to prepare for something different. Of course, we also had a call to the program, Clint, where somebody said, "Play Brees at receiver." I've taken like 25 hours, and I still don't quite understand that one. I'm still really trying to dive into that. Maybe if I go too far, though, into the matrix of that answer, I might just get lost.
Yeah, I think you'll wind up getting lost, and we won't be able to get you back on our plane of existence.
And I'll never make it to the Taproom River Ranch tomorrow. That would be my loss. So what I will tell you is this. Brees continues to push the envelope, whether or not it's genuine or this is something to force Arizona to prepare a little differently, time will tell. But my gut tells me that Brees doesn't screw around with stuff like this. I think it would be one thing if Sean Payton and the coaching staff were tossing out, "Hey, there's a real possibility that number nine's going to go." That would be a little bit more of your normal hallmark for gamesmanship. This to me feels different. This to me feels like a guy who's been bouncing off the freaking walls, whose wife, probably kids, are tired of having him at the house. Just get out of here, go do your job. And so if his head coach, who's famous for saying just do your job, And his family is saying, get out of here. You're just a caged animal. Go do your job and play. I think number nine, one of the most competitive human beings this side of the Mason-Dixon line, wants to go. And if he tells you that he wants to go and he's ready to go, I'm starting to get a feeling, and it's not my favorite feeling, that Breeze is going to play in this ball game. So I'm just giving you the latest as we have it on a Wednesday. All right, we'll transition. I told you, strictly professional, which, of course, is a change of pace for us on B2BS. We started on this side of the Texas divide, right? The New Orleans Professional Football Saints. Let's go to the Houston Professional Baseball Astros, and they ran into a bit of a buzzsaw, especially Garrett Cole ran into one at the plate.
The 1-0. Swinging a fly ball, well hit to left field. Way back goes this one. It's got a chance. It's going, going, and long gone up under the railroad tracks. Welcome to the World Series, Juan Soto. Nationals tie the game at 2 as Juan Soto goes opposite field for a tape measure home run onto the railroad tracks.
I'll tell you what's interesting, Clint. I love getting to explain sports to people who are a little bit sports illiterate. I had that opportunity last night. When Soto went yard and they were talking about this 20-year-old prolific mauler, I got the question, well, how old is the average Major League Baseball player? I guess 28. Amigo, we looked it up and it's 28 and some change. It felt pretty good. Hit the money on the head there, as our friend David Falk would say. And so when you think about the young stars in this game, and we immediately point toward Ronald Acuna Jr. and so many others who are starting to rebrand the sport as we know it. Shame on anybody who forgets to include Juan Soto. What he is doing, it's pretty incredible. And again, I mentioned some of the young stars. Everybody in our neck of the woods familiar with Yordan Alvarez. This guy, Soto, has been doing it now for 2 full seasons. He's pretty incredible. And he almost single-handedly helped touch somebody who felt untouchable. Garrett Cole hadn't lost, well, we all know, right? They've won his last 19 starts. He hadn't been hit like this since, like, May. And what a time for that to happen. And so now, all of a sudden, is there any panic in H-Town? Of course not. Let us not forget, they were beat, and pretty resoundingly, game one of the ALCS by the New York Yankees. And so this is not uncharted territory. What's different about this time around is that the guy who had been untouchable suddenly looked mortal. Does that mean Cole will falter? I don't think so. Does that mean that maybe you don't force it and try to go with him in game 4? Hey, let's see how the next few play out. But I think tonight, yeah, I mean, it's imperative, right, that you get back on to level ground and you get even in the series. If you want to take it back, you got to take this one. Justin Verlander versus Steven Strasburg, that Nats lineup, I'll agree with what a lot of came out of the mouth as I got to watch it last night on TV. Joe Buck and an ex-Atlanta Brave giving you the goods there and Smoltz. I think they were right. This one was billed as a pitching matchup, but maybe the most underrated part of the World Series coming in was the Nationals lineup. Just trust me, Anthony Rendon is going to be a top 3 finisher for the NL MVP this year. I think we understand at the top of that lineup, they've got a spark plug in Trey Turner. Got to hit, stole a base before you can blink in that ballgame last night. And from top to bottom, they've just got experience. I mean, even toward the bottom, as Drubal Cabrera, Victor Robles, these aren't splashy, sexy, spectacular names, batting 7 through 9, but they outperformed the Strohs 7 through 9 last night. Hell, let's group in 6 through 9, because Carlos Correa wasn't on his A game either. And the other thing that was hard to omit from observations in last night's game, Alex Bregman, woof. And while Rendon, on his side of the ledger, may be a top 3 candidate for the NL MVP, no question about it. Breggs is top 2. It's either him or it's Trout for the AL MVP, and he disappeared completely in that ballgame last night. It has been a postseason to forget for Alex Bregman so far. Here's the fun part. There's at least 3 more games for him to turn it around and join the likes of a guy that I told you yesterday, Clint. George Springer is a freaking magnet toward postseason greatness, especially the World Series. I can't tell you how impressive it is. 5 straight World Series games with a home run. Springer dinger is not just something that we aspire toward.
Yeah.
You wake up, you watch the World Series. Brother, it's a reality.
it's amazing to see what he's been able to do over the course of his career. But in the World Series, five straight, going for six tonight. Imagine if like he winds up hitting his sixth home run, especially late in that ball game, and winds up being the deciding factor. Minute Maid Park is going to blow up.
I thought you were going to reference that ball he hit last night that went off of the glove of the right fielder. And, yeah, Springer was doing a little bit of loafing there. Probably could have had a triple instead of a double. But if you think I'm about to point the finger at Springer for what happened last night, you got another thing coming. He was spectacular. Some of the other Strohs at the plate need to join the party, because while Cole came in with all of the plaudits after giving up two in the first inning, Mad Max was able to settle down and kind of gut his way through that ball game. So tonight it's Verlander versus Strasburg. JV was much better during the regular season. Strasburg has been the preferred of this pair so far in playoffs baseball. So we got a big one tonight. Again, we'll carry it, as we will every game. And that's something I do want to tell you before we head out in our first segment. I speculated upon this yesterday. It's in stone now. With STM Northside and all of our high school football games moved up a night from Friday to Thursday, we're officially going to be able to carry every single pitch of the 2019 World Series on 103.7 The Game. Yes, that means Friday night's Game 3 in the nation's capital. So we got a big, big show for you today at 4:30, less than 20 minutes from this moment. Cousin Dino coming aboard for Spreadheads. He continues to sizzle. I'm treading a little bit of water at this point, but we've got some great games to pick, and we will at 4:30. At 5:05, speaking of the World Series, we're taking you to Minute Maid Park, a live scene center prior to Game 2 from Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. And then 5:45, Jason Caldwell inside the Auburn Tigers. We're going all in on this LSU-Auburn matchup. Only 2 hours today. We're ready to max it out with you. So after a brief timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
See, that's just good timing. In fact, it's tremendous timing, because we're about to ask a sink or swim question of the day. It'll be LSU football themed and a little different than our usual fare, but I think you'll dig it. We've already got it up at 103.7 The Game, Facebook and Twitter. Let's get it at you here live on the airwaves. First, the music.
Love, exciting and new.
The ultimate in philosophical debates, looking deep into the future. I get it. We've got LSU-Auburn. There are only so many ways I can ask you questions about that one game. This one's further reaching. Which LSU Tiger becomes the best NFL receiver? I'll give you three options. Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Terrace Marshall. And by the way, some of your news of the day over the last 24 hours, Terrace Marshall Jr., the sophomore out of Bossier City, will be available for LSU's game against Auburn. So certainly good news. A two-headed monster is about to become a three-headed monster yet again. But which one do you think is the best NFL receiver? Before I give my answer, before Clint gives his, and we certainly want yours, 706-0111. I've had so many of these back and forth with people over LSU players in years past. My favorite was Odell and Jarvis. Again, it's the same position, so that's why that reminder was fresh for me. I was pretty adamant. In fact, I used to battle back and forth with Shea Dixon about this. I thought Jarvis was going to be the better pro receiver. And I understand that OBJ is a freak, but Jarvis had more receptions through their first however many, three seasons or so. I think that the case could be made Odell's had a better NFL career. I might see that one a little, but Jarvis has been a chain mover and been phenomenal. That was a great debate. I also felt pretty strongly that Mingo was going to be a better pro player than Sam Montgomery, when both were terrorizing people in the earlier portion of this decade. And while Mingo was a top 10 pick, neither really necessarily made it all that well at the next level. But this is the kind of place I'm coming from with these debates, and I think we can have fun with them. So we love your takes. Let's get them first. We're going to head out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Drake, you are first in line. which of those three becomes the best NFL receiver?
Terrence Marshall.
All right, tell me why.
Because he is so young and he got talent.
No question. We appreciate it. All right, Drake's giving us Terrace Marshall. He's first up. All of these guys are listed at 6'1 or taller. Marshall, the biggest, 6'4, 200. And along with Chase, only a sophomore. Of course, Jefferson listed at 6'3, 192. Not like he's an old man. He's a junior, and he's been doing it, producing for longer for LSU. I think a lot of ways you can go with this one. Drake's first out of the gate. He says it's Terrace Marshall. Let's go back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Raymond, welcome in. How are you?
Hello?
Hey, Raymond, which of these three is going to be the best?
Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson, you will.
All right, I appreciate it. And Raymond, we got to cut you off only because I hear myself in the background. It's bad enough I have to hear myself speak in general for 2 to 3 straight hours a day, but feedback of me is enough to make me go crazy. So Drake says it's Terrace Marshall. Raymond says it's Justin Jefferson. Clint, weigh in for me.
I'm going to agree with what our guy Raymond said. I think it's Justin Jefferson because, what I saw from him last year really showed me, hey, this guy can be the absolute stud of this wide receiver group. He hasn't necessarily been, feasting as much, mainly because I feel like Terrace Marshall has broke out as a bigger star. But I think Justin Jefferson will be a guy that's going to wind up living up to the hype and probably being one of the best wide receivers whenever he converts to the pros.
I feel pretty strongly the answer is Ja'Marr Chase, and I'm happy to be the first one to come with this so far in the program. Chase left Rummel as a freak. And again, just because you were this in high school doesn't mean you come out the other side of the turnstile as this to become a pro. LSU's had a lot of examples where the Cats, they do exactly that. But I think that Chase, coming out of Rummel, originally committed to Florida, reviewed his options. He's in Baton Rouge. And if you ask the people in Austin, Texas, who they wake up having nightmares of from that ball game in week two, it's number one. I think if you were to ask Vanderbilt, it's number one. Now, you can obviously point toward different games and say, okay, number two is giving people the willies as well. Number six was leading the nation in touchdown receptions before he was injured a few weeks back in that same game in Nashville. I think Ja'Marr Chase has a chance to become a superstar at the NFL level. In fact, I believe if he were eligible for this year's NFL draft, it would be an interesting conversation. Who's drafted first, Chase or Jefferson? No question, the best size of the three belongs to Marshall. No question, the best of the three Jefferson brothers, as far as an LSU player and a pro prospect, is Justin. I think Ja'Marr Chase just has it. He's actually kind of a nice fusion, if you will, of Odell and Jarvis. Jarvis is the ultimate chain mover. He was built for the modern NFL game to put in the slot to be your better version, in my opinion, of Wes Welker and so many others that have come through the NFL in recent years. Chase moves chains. He runs precise routes. You can't cover him on the outbreaking 10 to 15-yard route. He's got that slant pattern down, as do the rest of them. But I think he gives you a downfield element as well. Marshall, better in the red zone. Jefferson, the best deep threat of any of them. I think Ja'Marr Chase combines oh so many things. That's what I have to say. Let's get more of what you have. Back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Frank, which of the three you riding here?
Well, I hate to steal out of your cookie jar, but it's got to be Ja'Marr Chase, dude. Size, length, depth, range, versatility, route running, catching ability. He has all the intangibles. He can do everything you ask him to do on the football field when it comes to receiving.
So maybe the answer is he's the most complete guy. I don't know that he has some of the height, the top-end speed as some of the others do, but he really does just about everything, and he's making Joe Burrow look awfully good these days.
And that's what a wide receiver is supposed to do, man.
There you go. Too easy, Frank.
Absolutely.
See, I'm waiting on Frank to stumble when I hit him first with too easy. He hasn't done it yet. It's the sign of somebody who comes ready. He's on his toes. Let's take one more, and then we'll take a break. Back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Brad, you've got the final answer in our segment. Who are you going with?
Well, I'm also going with Ja'Marr Chase. He makes those great back shoulder catches. He catches the high balls, and he runs all the routes well that you mentioned, and we've seen that he can run away from people.
No question. Does a little bit of everything.
Reminds me a little bit of Michael Thomas.
Ooh, there you go. How about it? How about that? Everybody wants Joe Burrow to end up in the black and gold. But maybe the Saints already have a Michael Thomas black and gold carbon copy that's incubating in the purple and gold at the collegiate level. The Ja'Marr Chase-Michael Thomas comparison. I'm going to have to chew on that one for a little bit. Thomas has, I believe, an inch or two on him, but that's not bad. With the route running, the strong hands, the ability to get separation, that's not bad at all. Catching balls in tight windows. I think, ultimately, Clint, the right answer to this question, you know what it is, right? Is it Chase? Is it Jefferson? Is it Marshall? Yes, is the right answer to this question. Quick recess. And after this timeout, we'll be back in. Cousin Dino and Spreadheads on Bumper to Bumper Sports. What in the hell is Spreadheads? Oh, a segment for degenerate gamblers. All right, well, then it is time for Spreadheads with Cousin Dino. And it needs to become a segment for people that are picking winners. That's mainly a note to self. As we bring back in Cousin Dino, I'll cut through all the red tape. Brother, you are 4 games up on 500 for this season. I am 4 games down on 500. I don't want to meet in the middle. I'd prefer we both keep climbing.
Yeah, we will. I'm feeling good about these games. Some tough lines, but we had a couple of hot weeks. I know you're going to get your act together, so I got faith in you.
Yeah, I had you the last 2 years. This is your revenge. Again, let's see if we can all win. And I'll give you a little early heads up. I've got some road rage this week. I'll get to that momentarily. I'm going to let you start, though, amigo. Number 13, Wisconsin. At number 3, Ohio State. Buckeyes in the shoe, favored by 14.5.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I wanted to take Wisconsin at first, then I backpedaled. I'm going to take Ohio State to cover that large number. Wisconsin's a good team. I like the running back, Jonathan Taylor. They just lost to a horrible Illinois team. Ohio State just seems like a downhill train that's just drilling everybody. They just won on the road by 49 in conference. Their QB, Justin Fields, is a front runner for the Heisman. He's got 22 touchdowns and one interception on the year, which is ridiculous. And it's not even just their offense. Ohio State's D is giving up something like 8 points a game on average this year. So I think Vegas is trying to bait you. So I'm going to take the Buckeyes to cover the 14 and a hook at home here.
Disagree. This is part of my road rage. Give me number 13, Wisconsin, to bounce back from that embarrassing loss in Champaign. Make no bones about it, Dino. They won't win this ball game. They keep it within 2 touchdowns. I agree with you. Ohio State, Justin Fields, they seem to be moving around offensively as good as LSU and Burrow. Alabama, Tua, pre-injury. But I think Wisconsin's got more pride. I think that they had their chain jerked pretty well last week. I think they'll respond. I've got the Badgers to cover that number. Let's go to the SEC. Number 9, Auburn, at number 2, LSU. Bayou Bengal, edition of the Tigers, favored by 11.5. I'll keep the road rage, brother. I'm going Auburn to cover and lose here. Really a similar situation to Wisconsin. And like Wisconsin with Jonathan Taylor, Auburn will keep this one closer than a lot of experts think because of their ground game, not because of Bo Nix. I think they'll find some ways to shorten this one, try and play keep away from Joe Burrow and this prolific offense. LSU wins maybe even by 8, 9, 10 points. I'm playing with fire here, but I think Auburn keeps it within 11.5.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you here. I take Auburn to cover. I don't think Auburn wins. If this game was played in the Plains down there in Auburn, I think it might be a different story where they might have a shot. But I think the big thing here, LSU is playing electric football. I mean, Joe Burrow, we know, is one of the Heisman favorites. But he's never seen a defensive line that he's about to see with Auburn. With Derrick Brown, Nick Coe, Big Cap Bryant, Auburn is going to bring – they're going to bring some pressure, and they're going to put it in Joe Burrow's face. So I don't think Auburn wins, but I do think they cover. I agree.
LSU's O-line didn't allow a sack from Florida. Stout D-line. We'll see how they go against Auburn. You're right. That one may just tell the tale of this ball game. Let's get to number 8, Notre Dame, at number 19, Michigan. Somehow, some way, at home, the Wolverines are favored by 1. Which way are you going?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Golden Domers. I think Notre Dame wins this, you know, essentially a pick 'em game. I just have not been impressed with Michigan. They were down 21-0 last week before they saved face and kind of made it a respectable loss. And I think Notre Dame still has their sights in the playoff. I mean, the only real, if you even want to call Stanford a real team, the only team they really have left on their schedule is Stanford. I mean, I think they're still staring at the playoffs. I like what they do on both lines of scrimmage. I really like the moxie and the swagger their QB plays with, Ian Book. And key stat here, at the end of the day, Michigan is 1-10 overall when facing a top 10 team under Jim Harbaugh. Think about that. So Notre Dame goes in there, they win.
Michigan gave us a backdoor cover last week, brother, and how ungrateful are you? But I'm right there with you. I'm going Notre Dame on this one. They'll win this on the road. They've got more to play for. There's talks of an exit strategy in Ann Arbor for Harbaugh. That's not a good sign. I'm right here with you. Pains me to pick the Golden Domers, but good sense is all good sense. Let's move it to the Big 12. I'll go first. Number 15, Texas at unranked TCU, and the Longhorns only 1-point favorites. Dino, this one smells. You know what that normally makes me do, but I'm still going to ride with the Horns here. They're the better team. By and large, they went, you know, toe-to-toe, head-to-head with LSU at home. They did the same with Oklahoma in Dallas. Gary Patterson's group, historically, pretty darn good. They're not in the upper echelon of the Big 12 this year. So even though this line confuses me, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to Sam Ellinger and the Horns.
Yeah, I had the same thought. Very strange line to see it only be a 1-point line for a top 15 team against a very average 3-3 TCU team. But I'm going to take Texas as well. I might be getting baited, but I agree with a lot of things you said. I think a lot of the part of this line is Texas escaping 50-48 against a pretty bad Kansas team last week. I think Texas rebounds. I think Gary Patterson's team, like you said, is just not the same team. And I think Texas is just much more talented. So I think you've got to go with Texas here to basically win a pick 'em game.
Let's go to the game of the week in the SEC East, and nice division that I can actually say that. South Carolina at Tennessee. Gamecocks are 4-point favorites. Which direction are you going?
Yeah, I'm going with South Carolina. I don't love taking road dogs or road favorites in the SEC, but where is Tennessee going? I don't think they know who their quarterback is. I don't love what Jeremy Pruitt has going on there. He's going bananas. He's going lunatic on the sidelines. Meanwhile, I think Coach Boom over there in Columbia has South Carolina playing physical. I like their running game with Rico Daddle and Tavian Feaster. So it's not a tough place to play anymore up there in Neyland Stadium. Just ask Georgia State. So give me South Carolina to go up to Knoxville and cover the 4.
Tennessee did win 2 weeks ago at home against Mississippi State. I think that's more of a statement about the Bulldogs at this point, having to move on a quarterback to a true freshman. I'm with you. I got South Carolina covering the 4. I'm going all 5 road teams to cover. You've got 4 of the 5. The only place we disagree, I've got Whiskey. You've got the Ohio State University. We'll go to the NFL. I'll lead off, and this is my weekly homage to Teddy Bridgewater and the New Orleans Saints. It's part of the reason that my record is so horrible, but let's just call a spade a spade. Arizona at New Orleans. Saints are 9.5-point favorites. There are rumblings Breeze will play. I have to do my civic duty. Hey, there's a line from a Tennessee head coach as well. I'll go with Arizona here. You get it at this point.
Yeah, you know where I'm going. I'm going to take my Saints to cover here. I'm all over them. They went on the road last week. I told you to take them as an underdog to win straight up. They did. Not only did they win, they won by, I think, 10 or 11 points. The Cards have won 3 straight games, but they've been against horrible teams and the Giants, the Falcons, the Bengals. There's rumors Breeze will be back, but I think they need to keep rolling with Teddy Bridgewater. I don't know what people down there think, but Teddy B's got them rolling. So give me the Saints to cover that large number.
We tossed that question out yesterday. It's unanimous. Nobody wants Breeze playing in this game before the Saints bye week. All right, we'll keep it moving. Intriguing ball game in Orchard Park. Philly at Buffalo. Bills are 1.5-point favorites. I'm overjoyed to let you take this one first.
This was a tough line. Closest game of the week, spread-wise. But I'm going to take the Eagles on the road. Buffalo's been they're 5-1, but they've been fortunate. They played some bad teams. They needed a late touchdown to beat the Bengals. They were down 13 against a terrible Jets team. And I don't think the Eagles have played up to their potential. And I think Carson Wentz is showing signs that he's starting to get it back together. He's never lost 3 in a row. This would be 3 losses in a row. I just don't think it's happening. So give me the Eagles to go on the road and get the victory.
We've got to move quickly, so I'll just say that I agree. My basic premise, more desperate team here. It's Philly. They're going to win this ball game. Buffalo's been a great story. They may continue to be, but I got the Eagles here. We'll move it along. Chargers at the Bears, a couple of underperforming teams in their respective conferences, and yet the Bears are 4.5-point favorites. I think I'm going to take them. I just watched how bad that offense was with Mitch Trubisky back against the Saints, but the Chargers are something woeful this year. They've only got 2 wins. They're more than just desperate. I think they are defeated. So I'll take Chicago. That has a little more to play for.
Can I take the under 40.5 here? if I can't take that, give me the Chargers plus the points here. I know they've only got 2 wins, but I like Phillip Rivers a lot better than Mitchie Biscuits for the Bears under center. Chargers are 8-2 against the spread on the road in their last 10, so I think the Chargers go out there and take care of business against an overrated Bears team.
Mitchie Biscuits. Let's move it to 2 teams that are vying for NFC playoff spots. Carolina at San Fran. You're undefeated. San Francisco 49ers are 5.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I'm taking the Niners here to cover. It's a lot of points, but you got the East Coast team heading across the country, which we all know that's never a good thing. But the big thing is the defensive line. They got 4 former first-round draft picks, the Niners do, and Nick Bosa, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, Dee Ford. These guys are balling out on defense. I don't think backup quarterback Kyle Allen knows what's coming, so give me the Niners to cover the 5.5.
And former LSU linebacker Quan Alexander cleaning up a lot of tackles. I'm right there with you. I got the Niners as well. Quickly now to Sunday Night Football, Green Bay at Mahomes-less Kansas City. And the Packers are favored by 4.5, and I'm taking the Packers. Their defense was the story early in the year, and look at what's going on now offensively. A week ago, Rodgers threw 5 freaking touchdowns, including a dagger in garbage time. I think Green Bay's starting to get their mojo back. I'm taking them, and I'll give the 4.5 points, even on the road at Kansas City.
Yeah, it's scary. We're agreeing way too much. I'm not good at math, but that's 8 or 9 times, because I'm going to take the Pack as well. Aaron Rodgers literally had a perfect QB rating last week. The Packers are 4-0 against the spread when they're playing teams that are above 500. They're playing a team in the backup quarterback. I think the Pack go out to Arrowhead and get the win, cover, and move to 7-1.
I've got 8 out of 10 road teams to cover. You're right there with me, Dino, on 4 of them. From the college side, you're with me as well with the Eagles and the Pack on the NFL side. So the dice, we're rolling them. We're taking a chance next week. We're coming up roses.
All right, man. We're going to get it rolling. I think we got some winners for the listeners this week. I'm feeling good.
Yeah, with that laugh, I can tell you feel really good about it. Our thanks, as always, to Cousin Dino. It's a vote of confidence right there if I've ever heard one. And that's been Spreadheads for your hump day. We got to take our final break in the 4 o'clock hour. I'll keep it going on the Saints side. We'll go back to what you just heard. Drew Brees, rumblings that he'll play. The rumblings came straight from the horse's mouth. We'll discuss that and go around the NFL as well. So after this brief timeout, we'll be back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
Louisiana, one call.
You know.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Well, I think number one, he's a tremendous teacher. You know, and I think we've put together a good staff. The other thing with DA is his experience. You know, we were together back here in 06, 07 for a number of years. He's been around a lot of systems. And I think that, you know, paying attention closely to what we want to do defensively with our personnel, I think he's done a real good job there.
That's Sean Payton on his defensive coordinator, the DA, Dennis Allen, doing big things these days in the Big Easy. I want to get back to the Saints in this segment, and we will. We'll take your phone calls as well. Everything you just heard from myself, Cousin Dino, give us your own version of Spreadheads. But I want to remind you, in 15 minutes, we'll take you live to Houston, Texas, a scene setter for Game 2 of the World Series. Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle will be with us, of course, at 6 o'clock. Back out to Houston for the remainder of your evening on Acadiana Sports Station, Astro Launch. Robert Ford and Steve Sparks, first pitch, 7:08. It'll be Verlander versus Strasburg. All right, Jamie called the program, Clint. Fill in the blanks for me here. What did Jamie have?
So Jamie basically asked, Do you think Drew Brees would play 1 or 2 series against the Cardinals this Sunday? And, of course, he made it very vague where it's not like, oh, hey, he's going to start the first 2 series, treat it like a preseason game, or does he go in like one of the last 2 series of the ball game, basically?
All right, so the options presented to me by caller Jamie. Brees continues to tell reporters, in fact, he did so today, that his plan and the goal is to play. He said, all right, what's going to determine that? He said, if I feel like me. He said, how does the communication go? I tell Sean, meaning Sean Payton, Sean believes me. Pretty matter-of-fact stuff today from Drew Brees. And Jamie asked, will it be one or two series? I still think it should be none. Again, what will happen, what should happen, I learned my lesson about the difference of those two things from a half decade plus of covering the Les Miles era. Those are very different things, what will happen and what should happen. I think what should happen is he shouldn't play. What will happen? Whew. Tough to tell. And I'm not sure that there's a lot of middle ground here. In other words, I think it's disrespectful to not only the Arizona Cardinals but Teddy Bridgewater to use this as a preseason game. And so, no disrespect to Jamie's question, but that's what is being insinuated here. Do you play him a series or two and then get him out? What is this, the week before Labor Day? I mean, seriously, you can't really have the debate of, hey, can you play him for a series or two, let him get his feet wet, and then take him out? No! For me, it's either his show or he doesn't play.
And I think that's the same way with him. He's not going to let, he's not want to be
you
the
think
guy.
He's going to say, yeah, please bring in Teddy for the third series?
Yeah, no, he's going to be like, let me keep playing.
I mean, is this like the St. Thomas More Jamboree where Walker Howard comes in the third series? What? Come on, man. Again, this isn't directed toward Jamie, but I've seen a lot of this. When do you take Breeze out? I think you got to have the hook on him for the entire damn ballgame. Can you afford to play him for a few series, take him out, disrupt the flow of the game, and then put Teddy in there? I don't know. That's kind of what happened to Teddy Two Gloves in the Rams game. And I get the fact that on the road, baptism by fire in the Coliseum is different than at home against the Cardinals. I get it. You know? Aaron Donald's not coming through that door. But it's frustrating. From the way I look at it, unless this is posturing to force the Cardinals to have to prepare for Breeze slash both quarterbacks, then I just don't get this. If it's over competitiveness from Breeze, I can understand where he's coming from. I just hope that it's kind of the opposite of what's been laid out. Again, Breeze told reporters today, I tell Sean I'm good, Sean believes me. I hope, as I just mentioned, it's the opposite. I hope that Sean tells Drew, I don't care if you're good, this isn't your time, and Drew believes him. That's the way I hope this goes down. Again, is this a matter of football life and death? No, not necessarily. But I just don't see the point in giving Breeze an opportunity to re-aggravate that thumb injury either A, before it's necessary, but more importantly, B, before the bye week. I mean, this thing is just tailor-made and gift-wrapped for Breeze to come back with the Saints as either a 7-1 or 6-2 team. You'd have given any of us that option 5 weeks ago, we'd have taken it and sprinted with it. I just feel like this one's pretty elementary, but who knows? Stranger things have happened in sports, even in recent weeks. All right, let's get back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Twice in 2 days, I just must be on a hot streak. Halftime is with us. What's up, Halftime?
Oh, nothing. Ben just wanted to make you laugh right quick. I'm with you on this with Breeze. Like I said yesterday, I called. I wouldn't even play him against the Falcons. I wouldn't. I wouldn't even play him against the Falcons. That's just me. There's no reason to. But we're talking about with logic. But if you think about like the Patriots, yeah, you leave your starting quarterback in when you're already winning. It's the fourth quarter and you're winning by 20-something points and you still leave your starting quarterback in. It looks like Tom Brady is the only one. You don't have to use logic. Just go ahead and play. Nothing's going to happen to him. But everybody else, something bad's probably going to happen. And I just wanted to throw that in, make you laugh right quick. Have a good one, man.
Sometimes you got to laugh. Otherwise, we might just cry. Although, these would be, I think, misguided tears, right? Everybody wants what's best for the Saints and Breeze in the long term for this season. There's no question about that. How does this Cardinals game contribute toward the greater good going forward into December and January? That's what's hard for a lot of us to see, I guess, the forest through the trees. I don't blame Breeze for feeling that way. Somebody just protect him a little bit. So we've had a good talk there with Halftime. We had a good call from Jamie. Ultimately, my response is, I don't accept the notion of one or two series and then out. It's either all in or all out. That's kind of how I look at this. All in would make me more than just a little bit nervous. All out gives another opportunity for Teddy Bridgewater to show what he can do in life after the Saints. And why don't I go ahead and hammer this point home before we hit our only hour break of the program. Can we all acknowledge what the best case scenario is here? For me, it's crystal clear. Breeze comes back after the bye week, whether it's week 9, 10, 11, sometime in there. Breeze comes back after the bye week. The Saints get a first-round bye in the playoffs. The Saints win the Super Bowl. Breeze retires out on top, Elway style. The Saints get some of that financial albatross off of their neck heading into 2020 and beyond. And Teddy Two Gloves has proven that he gets to take the reins. Can we all recognize that that's the ideal scenario here? For all of that to happen, Breeze has to be right for this stretch run. I'm just saying. And now I've got one final thing to say. We call it the final word of every 4 o'clock hour.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Quick. And you want to talk about quick work? CD. My wife had to tell me about this storyline in sports. I didn't even catch this. Alex Morgan, she of U.S. Women's National Soccer Team fame, pregnant and due in April. So a little bit of quick math there reveals that's pretty darn quick work that happened there with Alex Morgan after the ladies won the World Cup. So not long after she was doing the British tea celebration heard round the world, Alex Morgan got knocked up, and no, it wasn't you, and no, it wasn't me. Hey, that's good for me as a married man, but it's bad for both of us because Alex Morgan is basically the total package. So congrats to that one lucky dude out there. Quick work from Alex Morgan. It's the final word of the hour. We'll be right back. Sending you to Houston, Chandler Rome, when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Welcome into the second and final hour of Bumper to Bumper Sports on this hump day, October 23rd edition. Glad to have you back. Happy to bring you home on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. Quick storylines from around South Louisiana in football. Terrace Marshall Jr., sophomore wideout, back for LSU at practice. He will play Saturday against Auburn. Joe Burrow's got all three of his lead wideouts back in the fold. And Cardale Thomas, freshman offensive lineman, back practicing. Don't know that he'll play or be asked to, even as a reserve, in this ballgame Saturday. But that's certainly good news for James Craig and the O-line. On the Saints side of the ledger, Drew Brees telling reporters, it is the plan. He wants to play. What's the process? He'll see if he feels like him. What else did he tell reporters? Eventually, he'll just tell Sean, yeah, I'm good, and Sean will believe me. Don't know if that's in the Saints' best interest, but number 9 is itching and ready to go. And it's not a trigger finger. It's that thumb that is suddenly feeling better. Enough of the football. We've got World Series Game 2 coming up on Acadiana Sports Station. 7:08 first pitch. We've got Astro launch at 6 o'clock. And right now, we're going out to Houston. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. Chandler, what's the atmosphere like right now at Minute Maid Park?
Yeah, atmosphere is building. A lot of people coming in. The commissioner of baseball just walked past me, so that was an interesting way to begin this interview. But other than that, yeah, Astros just finished BP. Nats are about to get back on the field and take their BP. And, you know, I mean, every game in the postseason is a must-win. Labeling any postseason game any less of a must-win game is kind of dumb. But the Astros don't want to go to D.C. down 2-0. They face the same situation against the Yankees, and then we're able to pull out a win to go to the Bronx tied. I think they'd like to do that again in the World Series.
Please send our best to Rob Manfred, the commissioner, and as it pertains to last night, look, Gerrit Cole being mortal and human isn't a surprise. He was still pretty good, just not his best. But what did we learn, or maybe what were we reminded of when it comes to this Nats lineup at the plate?
Juan Soto is an absolute stud, and I think we all knew that, but he showed every facet of his game last night. I mean, where he hit that home run off of Gerrit Cole onto the train tracks in left field, you know, left-handed hitters don't hit balls there. He's an insanely strong kid. He turns 21 tomorrow. This is his last game as a 20-year-old tonight. He is the straw that stirs the drink for that entire lineup. And if the Astros can't control him, you know, Anthony Rendon hits in front of him, and Anthony Rendon's a legitimate National League MVP candidate. So the middle of their order is really difficult to get there. Gerrit Cole did not do a good job last night at controlling Juan Soto. You saw Trey Turner gets on base. He's going to run. The Nats were aggressive last night. They stole two bases against the Astros. The Nats probably got more clout for their starting pitching coming into this series. But I'm going to say I was pretty impressed with their lineup last night, their approach against Cole, because for the last month or so, it just kind of felt like every time Cole goes out there, he does whatever he wants. And last night was certainly not the case.
Chandler, an interesting point you made there, two steals against Martin Maldonado. I would imagine with Verlander on the mound tonight, it'll be Robinson Chirinos behind the plate. How does that maybe change the dynamic?
So Cole generally is slow to the plate, and that's why they have Martin Maldonado back there, because Gerrit Cole, he's never really done a great job of controlling the running game in his career. Verlander's a little bit better at that. He's a little bit better at controlling the running game, a little bit quicker to the plate. Chirinos doesn't have the arm, is certainly not the defensive catcher Maldonado is, but he's improved a little bit this season with the Astros, caught a few more base stealers than he had with the Rangers. So I'm not sure if they're going to run like they did last night. Trey Turner gets on base, he'll probably run because that's just his game. But other than that, I'm not sure if that aggression is going to continue tonight. And it's really hard to get guys on base with Justin Verlander anyway.
Previewing Game 2 of the World Series with Chandler Rome live from Minute Maid Park on 103.7 The Game. I came into the World Series wondering about Yordan Alvarez, and now I'm wondering a little bit about Alex Bregman. And I understand guys go through occasional slumps, but what about the former LSU Tiger? You think he has a chance to turn it around during this postseason?
Yeah, he struck out three times last night for the first time all year. Clearly is kind of not himself right now. He's very hard on himself after the game, saying he's been terrible all postseason, and he said he's going to take his bat home and sleep with it. So we'll see if that got any mojo back for him. But I mean, they need him to be good. They need him to be good at the top of the order. We've seen 12 games is a large enough sample size now that we can kind of confidently say this Astros offense is not going to be what it was in the regular season. The pitching's too good, and they're just not going. They're not going to stack at bats and stack hits together like we saw in the regular season. Last night was probably some of their best at bats in the postseason. They got Max Scherzer up to 111 pitches through 5 innings, but they were 3-for-12 with runners in scoring position. Those are just crucial at bats. The playoffs are determined by pitching and timely hitting, and the Astros have had pitching. They just haven't had timely hitting this whole postseason. So maybe for Bregman, it's not going to be like a home run or something like that that turns. Maybe it's like a run scoring single, like a 2-run double or something that just kind of breaks it open. Because right now, I mean, the frustration level I think is high with the fact that they haven't hit with runners in scoring position all season, and one of the guys they trust to drive in a lot of their runs, Alex Bregman.
I love having you on, Chandler, for a lot of reasons. One of them, you lead me into questions I already had in mind. And 111 pitches for Scherzer last night. It meant that the Nats had to go into the bullpen early and had to use a number of guys. So much so, you think that it affects the way this series unfolds with their rotation and their bullpen, or no?
I think it's a huge factor. The Nationals have the worst bullpen in playoff history. There's never been a team with a worse bullpen ERA in the playoffs, period, much less the World Series. They trust two guys down there, and it's Sean Doolittle and it's Daniel Hudson. And they used both of those guys last night for more than three outs. They had to bring Patrick Corbin in, their projected game three starter. He came in to throw the sixth inning. So I think if they can do that against all the stars, they can get them out of the game in the sixth and seventh inning. It'll help because we see with this Astros lineup, when they see a guy more than twice, especially a reliever, they become a little bit easier to hit. And you see even saw last night, they put up great at-bats against the bullpen guys last night, just the deficit was too big for them to overcome. So I think it would serve them well to do exactly what they did last night. You know, get Max Scherzer or tonight Steven Strasburg, get him out of the game in the fifth or sixth inning, get into that bullpen and see those arms, because beyond Hudson and Doolittle, they don't have much. And Dave Martinez, the Nationals manager, trusts a grand total of six pitchers on his staff. And they're going to try to get through this entire series with six guys. And it worked against the Cardinals in the NLCS because that only went four games. If this thing goes six or seven games, I'm not sure if that'll work out for them.
As for the Stros rotation, Chandler, is it your opinion A.J. Hinch will monitor the way these next two games go and whether or not he should even attempt to bring Gerrit Cole back for game four?
Well, if you're down 3-0, then I think you have no choice. But, yeah, I think it'll certainly be a monitor thing, see how it goes. I look today, this could be kind of a redo of New York. There's some rain in the forecast in D.C. for these games 3, 4, and 5. I'm not sure if that relates or anything. But Zach Greinke's going to go game 3, and then I'd imagine if the Astros are up in the series 2-1, they'll bullpen game it. And I'd imagine they'd probably do that, too, if they're down 2-1. I think Jose Urquidy showed them a lot in game 6 against the Yankees. He came in, he was poised, he threw strikes, he gave up a home run but wasn't rattled, and just really showed them that I think that they can trust him. So I wouldn't even be surprised, honestly, if they just make it a traditional start for Jose Urquidy and just have kind of a short leash and go to the bullpen early. But I think the only way you could see Gerrit Cole come back on short rest is if they're down 3-0 in the series.
One more for our guest, Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. He is live from Minute Maid Park. Have to at least ask you about the, incident after Game 6 of the ALCS. Has it been a factor outside of, what we continue to see in the stories that you write for the Houston Chronicle, what we read on Twitter? Has it at all affected the series itself?
Well, the storylines around it and the feel around it is definitely different. I don't think the city of Houston or the organization wanted this to be the storyline around games 1 and 2 in the World Series, because it's completely dominated. The games have taken a backseat to this. And if you look anywhere on Twitter, anywhere on social media, anywhere just kind of in the news cycle, Brandon Taubman's actions are leading the news. And it's really overshadowed the games, which is unfortunate. But, you know, what Taubman did in the clubhouse was even more unfortunate. And, you know, we don't get as much access to players in the postseason. They don't open the clubhouse pregame like they do in the regular season. So I'm not sure what the players think. You know, I can't really gauge that move. But A.J. Hinch has handled everything as we would probably expect, very diplomatically. You know, he's spoken very cerebrally and very, very measured in his responses. His bosses have not shown themselves to field questions, so they kind of left it to A.J. Hinch to be the spokesman for this, which is certainly one tactic to use. I'm not sure that I would employ the same one, but, you know, it's a controversy and it's a problem. It's something that the Astros, whether they like it or not, they're going to have to confront this at some point. Right now they're kind of issuing weird statements and being very combative in the way they're addressing this. But eventually this is going to come to a head, and the Astros are really going to have to get out in front of it.
Chandler, really appreciate you doing this on a World Series game day. We'll continue to follow your work. Thank you, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle, quite literally, Johnny, on the spot, stepped outside of his interviews at the juice box to talk with us. Pretty cool stuff. And, man, there's a lot to digest there, Clint. I mean, a whole lot. We'll start with the on-the-field stuff. An opportunity for rain to push this thing back might help both teams, right? Get the rotation right for the Stros. It worked out in the ALCS to get Verlander exactly where they wanted him. Maybe this time it works out for A.J. Hinch to get Gerrit Cole exactly where he wants him, back in for game 4. So monitor the weather as this one shifts from Houston over to the nation's capital. And the idea that right now this Nationals offense maybe has a little more continuity top to bottom than the Stros, it was on display last night. I have a hard time believing that that holds, though. I just can't think that Correa continues to trend the way that he did last night, that Bregman will trend the way he has. Glad that he slept with the bat. Do whatever you got to do. Go out there and get Joe Boo, Pedro Serrano style, feed him some rum, just hit the ball out of the park and drive it into the gaps in the outfield. So we'll see exactly what happens on the field. As for the off-field stuff, I'm glad that Chandler addressed it. I expressed some frustration with the situation yesterday. Understand that I'm not coming in on the side of Taubman on this one. I just wish it were more about baseball. And I guess what I would tell you that I just heard from Chandler, maybe you did as well. It's interesting that within the confines of that ballpark, in the city of Houston where Chandler lives, that the World Series is taking a back seat to this storyline. Absolutely incredible. The times we live in, the things people say, repercussions for your actions. And as Chandler mentioned, A.J. Hinch being the one to come out and kind of take the brunt of it and give the most authoritative statements yet, and not the front office or ownership even. Ugh, not a great look, but we will have World Series baseball. It was fun to take in last night. Hopefully the action on the field continues to trend in that direction. All right, after this break, I want to get into LSU football, let you hear some from Gus Malzahn. His War Eagles / Plainsmen / Tigers will invade Death Valley this Saturday afternoon, so we'll talk about that matchup when we return. So after a brief timeout, we'll be right back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in business. Going to do my best to lead us to LSU-Auburn conversation in this segment. Then we'll throw shade at half past the hour. Don't forget, in 25 minutes, Jason Caldwell inside the Auburn Tigers, talking all things LSU-Auburn from his side of the ledger. But we did have a call in the break. CD, I know you didn't get a name, but one of our female listeners asked, okay, what are you and Chandler talking about? What is going on with the Astros? What is this big storyline? How do I explain this one? The gist of it is that an Astros assistant GM, after the Stros' Game 6 win over the Yankees in the ALCS, this ball game was played in Minute Maid. It was a champagne-soaked celebration, and there weren't any interviews going on at the time of the incident in question. But reportedly, this Astros assistant GM said five or six times over, and I'll paraphrase, "I'm so bleeping glad we got Acuña," and yelled that reportedly in the direction of three female reporters that were in the area, one of them that was wearing a domestic violence pin. Now, Acuña, of course, was in all kind of hot water when playing with the Toronto Blue Jays for what was reported as throwing his girlfriend at the time down a flight of stairs. A gruesome, gruesome story. This was his girlfriend, baby mama, and she decided that she was going to leave the country with the child. Acuña was not allowed to contact them, but no further charges were really filed or pressed because, of course, she left the country. Again, that's a very bare-bones explanation of the situation. And so now, understandably, with this report that SI.com first filed, and the Astros kind of rebuked at first, came out and said this is, you know, not up-and-up reporting, this is bad journalism, there's no facts, this, that, and the other. And now Hinch has had to come out and say that it's unfortunate that these kind of things are happening. And so here we are. The World Series is being played, and this is a bigger topic of conversation. Again, if you were just to follow this situation on social media, God bless your soul. But if you are doing such a thing, you'll find nationally respected reporters who we've had on this program, Clint. Let's give Nicole Auerbach as an example from The Athletic. She tweeted as soon as that game ended last night, "This is a win for women in sports everywhere." To say that this storyline in a lot of circles is taking over the World Series is very fair. I'm not attempting to run and hide from the storyline in this program. Obviously, I just asked Chandler about it. Just did my best to run it down chapter and verse for you, at least the "This Story for Dummies" version of it. And there you have it. So it's been something that just overshadows baseball. And on this show, for our purposes, that's what I'll tell you.
Exactly. I think that's just the best way to kind of bring it up, because it's just a whole...
If I was there, I'd tell you a different story. Exactly. I'd have a very strong opinion. I wasn't. I've got conjecture at this point. Everybody else does.
Exactly. You're just kind of repeating what was reported.
And, you know, speaking of social media, Chandler is taking a beating because he's just reporting everything that comes out. And Astros fans just want to watch the World Series and get the info from their team. So It really is a mess. So the baseball just can't come soon enough, and I'll leave it there on the tarmac. We won't take flight any further. I will get you to the latest from Gus Malzahn, his presser after yesterday's Auburn practice. And we'll start with Gus's thoughts on LSU's offense. This is a guy who has been a mastermind of a lot of really good offenses. What's he think of what Burrow and company are doing?
And it looks like a video game when you watch them on film. Their quarterback is outstanding, the way he plays. He's got some big-time receivers. He's got quite a few of them that have big playability. The running game, when they hand the football off, they've been very successful. Number one offense in our league, number two in the NCAA.
We'll go to the Auburn side of the football next. I anticipate, as I told you and Cousin Dino earlier, that Auburn's going to do their best to keep this on the ground and take some possessions away from Burrow and the offense as best they can. They're going to have to do that with some of their stud running backs, and that would include Booby Whitlow if he's available. Here's Malzahn, the latest with Whitlow's injury.
There's no doubt. I mean, not having Booby obviously is a tough one, but the good thing is they did get some experience last week on the road. We do know it's going to be louder and everything that goes with it, but they got that experience, and we got a lot of trust in them, and this is why they came to Auburn. And now you just got to seize the moment.
You go to a place like Auburn, LSU, basically anywhere in the SEC to play against the best. And Malzahn says here, that's what the War Eagle / Plainsman / Tigers will be doing this Saturday.
And we've got a different team. They've got a different team. And we have an opportunity. And, you know, 2 years ago, we let one off the hook. And a lot of our guys experienced that are here. And, you know, if we get that opportunity, we got to finish it. But, you know, it's a great opportunity. Like I said, I mean, you're playing against one of the best teams in all of college football right now on their home field. But this team's different, and every year's different.
You know, one other thing that's of note, I think LSU's schedule is perfectly even and symmetrical in 2019. Four games, bye week, four games, bye week, four games. Auburn's is a little different. They had a bye coming into this one. And Malzahn says here, among their biggest foci, if I can look back to some math classes back in the day, one of the biggest things that they focused on was handling the noise of Tiger Stadium. Here, Malzahn details how they did that.
One of our focuses, you know, of course, that's a loud place to play. We didn't handle the noise very good at Florida. We've been focused on that off week and then even last week. So really, you know, expecting our guys to handle the noise better and communicate better than we did at Florida.
True freshman quarterback Bo Nix going to be baptized by fire in Death Valley Saturday afternoon. Will it be the atmosphere LSU Georgia was last year at 2:30? Don't know about that. Don't know if there will be quite as much Auburn influence as there was Silver Britches? There we go. Struggling with the pluralisms today, Clint, but I don't know if Auburn will bring as many fans as Georgia did last year is what I'm getting at. I do think the place will be loud. I do think LSU fans will have it rocking, and I do think Nix is going to experience something that is very different than what he claims he experienced in the season opener, Jerry World against Oregon, something that maybe is akin to what Florida brought in the swamp, but LSU fans looking to disrupt the freshman of that, there could be absolutely no question. All right, no doubt about it. We got to hit a break. We've got 30 more minutes to go. On the other side, we're going to throw shade. It's a twofer today. First up, on the Pels in-game rotation. Alvin Gentry and company lost in OT in Toronto last night. He's catching a lot of flack. I think that's wrong. I'll tell you why. And a little more shade to be thrown at the Washington Nationals. Hey, look, they won the ball game. Not throwing shade at that, but there's a few things from the dugout that, well, they might just need to clean up a little bit. I'll tell you why as well on that front. And don't forget, in about 18 minutes, Jason Caldwell, more from the Auburn Tigers side of this LSU-Auburn affair on Saturday. So stick with us. After this brief timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com,
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 1037 The Game.
Back in and continuing to have some fun here on B2BS down the stretch on a hump day. Yeah, we've got Astros. They need to take one back if they want to take it back. And they've got game two coming up tonight, 7:08. First pitch. Again, it's going to be a big one. Justin Verlander versus Steven Strasburg, live from Minute Maid. We're going to send you there, Clint and I, less than a half hour from this moment. 6 o'clock, Astro Launch, your pregame show with Robert Ford and Steve Sparks. Between now and then, well, we're about to throw some shade, but do not forget, quarter to 6, Jason Caldwell, inside the AuburnTigers.com. He'll give us the latest from Gus Malzahn's Tiger/War Eagle/Plainsman. And just how potent that running game is this year for Bo Nix and Auburn. How might that mesh against LSU and a run defense that really is starting to come together? But all of that, naturally, is future talk. Let's live in the now. Let me remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and, of course, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And remember that they're going to help you top down. It starts with Mark at Patio Center. They sit down with you, gather information, and then help you create a vision that they'll fulfill. They can definitely do it before this upcoming baseball season for LSU, UL, and then the next go-round of hopefully the defending world champ Houston Astros. They might be able to fit it in before the Super Bowl, but only if you hurry to the website, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's truly never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
How about unpopular opinion version of Shade CD? Haven't really talked a stitch about the Pels opener north of the border. Fred Van Vliet goes off for a career high for the Raptors, and the defending champs take down the new-look New Orleans Pelicans in overtime. They played a pretty darn good ball game. What was odd about it, and a lot of people kind of screaming from the rooftops about this, the lineup combinations down the stretch when it mattered for Alvin Gentry, and the fact that dude went 12 deep. He played 12 people in an NBA basketball game. What is this, JV tryouts? At least that's what many are screaming. And down the stretch, here is who started in overtime. Redick, Melly, Lonzo, Ingram, and Drew. Hey, that's not a bad lineup, especially considering Nicolo Melly was stroking it. I mean, the guy had 9 points in 4 minutes in the opening, 20 minutes of the ball game. But down the stretch, you saw a lot of Frank Jackson. You saw Alexander Walker, the rookie. You saw Josh Hart. I guess here's my point. There are a lot of people today that are playing armchair basketball coach. Can't say quarterback, but you get my drift. A lot of people saying, I can't believe Alvin Gentry doesn't know his rotation yet. Cannot believe he would give away game 1 of 82 just to test out his wares and his bench. Well, I'm throwing shade at that group, Clint. Today, I'm going in on them. That's exactly what he should be doing. Did you see the graphic that was shown toward the end of that ball game? Yours truly was flipping back and forth between the World Series and, as much as my audience at home would let me, going back to the Pels Raptors. I know you saw this, Clint.
Yeah.
I think the Pels have 6 or 7 guys that are in that 12-man mix that are 23 years or younger, and that doesn't even include Zion Williamson, who's hurt. Yeah, they're trying to work in Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, who both have come over and are young players from the Lakers. Yeah, they're trying to work in a couple of their rookies. Frank Jackson, who's still young from Duke. This is a team that is still trying to find its identity. I have no problem whatsoever with mixing it up in game 1 of 82. If you want to come and scream from a rooftop sometime in late March about where the win-loss total is, that's fine. But this thing is a long-term experiment. So, Clint, I'm throwing some shade at people that are chucking it right now at Alvin Gentry.
Exactly. It's frustrating to kind of hear about that. Everybody's definitely not exactly all in on the Alvin Gentry experiment, moving people around and figuring out who's going to fit well. I'm like, I'd much rather do that, especially with the situation you're in, sans Zion Williamson for supposedly 6 to 8 weeks. So without him, you're having to kind of figure out what you're going to be doing offensively.
And I'll give you a little bit of shade in a different direction, right? So let's just say we've got some wind and that palm tree now is shading somewhere other than Toronto. I think that, and we touched on this a good bit during the program today, I think that the stance and the statement from Drew Brees, if indeed it is posturing, the fact that it is the plan, as Brees told reporters right before our program started, if it's the plan for him to play Sunday, and that's just posturing to make the Cardinals have to prepare for number nine, we're all good. Not going to be a problem. No big deal. But it's a little more than NBD if he does intend to play. And if that is actually the plan, we discussed this ad nauseum yesterday. But just one final reminder during today's show, there's no way, no how, that Drew Brees should be throwing a football in between the lines with large human beings coming after him this Sunday. There's just no call for it.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Per the usual, those are just my thoughts. And how about that, Clint? I got through throwing shade today without looking back at the World Series at all. And there were some elements there that I thought were pretty hilarious. For example, did you notice Annabelle Sanchez and numerous members of the Washington Nationals that weren't going to play last night wearing like tinted red and gold shades in the dugout?
Yeah.
What in the world is that?
That was just absolutely fantastic.
I had a good time with something else as well. And this isn't nice. If this were the Jim Rome show, I'd be breaking a rule. Clint, personal appearance?
It's show fodder in this sense.
It is show fodder for us. Of course it is. did you notice the quote-unquote bat boy for the Nationals?
I didn't necessarily like pay that much attention to it.
I'm going to encourage all of our listeners to listen to the ball game on Acadiana Sports Station tonight. However, if you find yourself parked in front of the boob tube and you're watching Astros Nationals, just do yourself a favor and keep an eye peeled, because let's just say that I don't think Hispanic ball players are the only ones that probably stretch their age a little bit, right? They're not the only ones, because to call this person a bat boy would be a misnomer. This would be a Hispanic gentleman that is no younger, in my opinion, than 20 to 21 years old, squeezing into a bat boy's outfit. I looked at my wife and I tried to tell her, that looks like Batman. And then, of course, there's Bruce Wayne jokes that started to ensue. But just trust me, it feels a little bit like Zoolander. Merman, it is Batman that is in the Washington Nationals dugout. You will thank me later. You will call the program tomorrow about it. I don't have any doubt about that. All right, we got to throw it to our final break in today's show. On the other side, we wrap it up with a good friend of the program, Jason Caldwell. He's been covering Auburn Tigers football for 2+ decades. What's his make on this edition of Malzahn's Men, and how does he think this one might fit into a pantheon of great recent ball games between the SEC West Tigers? Excited for that interview. We'll take a quick timeout, then we'll be back with Jason and more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back in one final time for your 5 o'clock hour. We got to get down to the meat of the matter. LSU-Auburn is usually one of the nuttiest games for the Bayou Bengals season. I don't know if this one will be any exception. We'll learn a little more. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Waiting for us, Jason Caldwell, in his 20th year covering Auburn athletics for Inside the Auburn Tigers and AUTigers.com. Jason, how goes it today?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Hey, life is good here. I love looking back historically with you, because in that 20 years that I just mentioned, you're covering Auburn. Auburn LSU has been absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I think that's the understatement. If you can talk about a game that's been from, you know, a huge fire. That was a little bit before me, but you had a fire game here in Jordan-Hare Stadium. You've had phantom whistles in games in 95, but, you know, since then we've had, you know, fourth quarter comebacks. We saw a couple of years ago LSU with a big second half comeback against Auburn. We've seen the lateness of the last Miles game. I mean, you know, touchdowns on the last play of the game, game-winning field goals, five missed field goals. You had everything you could just about imagine has happened in this series in the last 20, 25 years, and it's what makes this weekend one of the most fun of the entire season.
Hey, the last time we spoke, Jason, we were getting ready for that Auburn-Florida game. It didn't go the way that you anticipated or me, to be completely honest. So what did you learn about the team from that game in the Swamp, and how does that inform your feelings about it moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I think you look at it, and I thought the Auburn defense showed that, you know, what they were capable of. It's a Florida team that's come out and scored some points against both, you know, LSU and South Carolina since then. I think that Auburn defense has shown that, you know, they're a force to be reckoned with. They'll get an ultimate test on Saturday. But, you know, Auburn offensively, I think they learned, and we probably learned too, that maybe probably be a little bit more basic in what you're doing. They tried to do so much at the line of scrimmage, and I thought it really kind of caused a brain freeze at times for them. And, you know, that's tough with anybody, especially with a true freshman quarterback. So I would expect less subs, less trying to change the play, and just trying to execute the plays you're running a little bit more on offense. And yeah, that's kind of what Gus Malzahn did early. Hasn't done as much of it, you know, in the last few seasons. A lot more subs. We'll see if they can get out of that. You know, they played pretty good against just an overmatched Arkansas team last weekend, which doesn't show you much, but thought it was a good second half for Bo Nix, throwing some balls down the field, big plays. And, you know, we'll see how this Saturday unfolds without Booby Whitlow. Obviously, some young running backs I would expect to get maybe a few more touches, with DJ Williams probably being the top guy.
Talking Auburn football with Jason Caldwell, a great follow on Twitter, at ITATJason. So keeping it basic on offense, I get that philosophy, Jason. How about the amount that you could put on the shoulders of Bo Nix? Anything you took away from that Florida game that maybe changes your impressions there, especially heading into the game at Death Valley?
Yeah, you know, I thought that. I still think it comes down to being able to run the football. You got to be able to run it and establish a run. But I think probably as much as anything for this team is something they showed a little bit more of last week, which is putting Anthony Schwartz and Seth Williams on the field together. Those are your top two playmakers right now on offense. And, you know, early on in this season, they were kind of playing the same position, Schwartz coming back from a broken hand, and so kind of easing him back into things. Well, last week, they put those guys on the field more together. That causes a team to have to decide, okay, what's your poison here? You're not going to double both those guys. And so I think that's something that helps the passing game, helps Bo. I think getting the ball out of your hands a little bit earlier. You know, Florida did a good job, and obviously that's a different Florida defense with those two guys coming off the edge than they've shown the last couple of weeks. So I think the challenge is there for Bo just to make the play that's there, not try to force it, and let your defense go and try to play the play.
All right, a lot of talk so far about the Auburn offense defensively. How does the secondary match up with a couple of guys in Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson? We've learned today that Terrace Marshall will be back. What's that matchup look like for you, understanding how much Burrow wants to throw it?
Yeah, you know, I think like anything, I think it starts up front. You got to be able to get pressure. If you don't, it's almost impossible nowadays to slow down an offense, you know, like LSU, like Alabama. Some of those are really good wide receivers across the board. I think it starts with pressure. This Auburn secondary has tackled really well, and that's one of the keys, I think, you know, going into a game like this, is if you're going to give up plays, but if you make them the 8 to 10 yard plays and not 50 yarders, that's the difference. That's how you play defense. And this Auburn secondary has tackled well. I think that'll be of utmost importance on Saturday.
11 or 12 points right now, the Vegas line. That seems a little ridiculous for a game like this, right?
It's really interesting. You know, that one, not really a surprise when you look at the difference in the offenses. Nobody's really kind of slowed down LSU to this point. Auburn's offense has kind of struggled some to be consistent. But the thing to me is not really as much about the line as just kind of the take nationally has been about what happens if Tua can't play against this. It's all been about the LSU-Alabama game in a couple of weeks. And this one kind of feels like it's getting lost in the shuffle a little bit. And that's, you know, that's not bad news for Auburn, but I think it kind of feels that way. I'm sure it's not that way in Louisiana, but it feels that way nationally, that this one is kind of getting overlooked in preparation of that LSU-Alabama matchup.
You know exactly the buttons to press, and I think you're right, because even on this show, I'm doing my best to keep it on track for LSU-Auburn. It's hard not to look ahead to LSU-Bama. Is any of that being discussed right now within that Auburn football circle, you know, that inner bubble over there?
I'm sure that it's something that, you know, if you turn on the TV and you see, you know, Desmond Howard comparing Joe Burrow and Tua and talking about that the potential matchup there. I think it's probably something that maybe not as discussed outwardly, but I'm sure on the inside, that's probably something that this team is using for a little bit extra motivation, going, look, everybody thinks, you know, this is just a precursor to the main event. And, you know, I think that's probably something that, especially these older guys, you know, it's been a game that they thought they should have won 2 years ago. 20 years since Auburn won in Baton Rouge, I would think that, you know, this will be a pretty motivated team coming in Saturday.
Coming down the stretch with Jason Caldwell, AUTigers.com. Jason, good enough to join us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. I'll get your early take on that game. LSU-Alabama, and I guess some of the scuttlebutt from the Yellowhammer State. What is going on with Tua? What's the word over there?
You know, it's hard, really hard to tell because, you know, these surgeries that are now happening because of high ankle sprains, how serious is it, any different than we've seen the last couple of years? How long will that take to heal? And are you 85%? Are you 100%? Because I think an 85% is a much different quarterback when you talk about facing an LSU defense and knowing that you got to score points. But I think it's really interesting. We're talking about today. The most interesting thing to me is you look at LSU's defense and kind of people have gone, you know, given up some points here or there, but they've played better opponents than Alabama has. I actually think LSU's defense is better than Alabama's right now. They got a bunch of young guys. You know, people talked about a potential shootout. I think it could be a potential shootout.
Looking forward to that game. Hey, not quite as much as the one that we've got coming up in Tiger Stadium. What's your favorite memory of a game that's played in Baton Rouge? You gave us some of the ones over from your neck of the woods. How about your favorite one in Baton Rouge?
Well, it's probably the only one. Well, the only two I've seen Auburn win were in '93 as a student coming down there, and in 1999 that first one. But since then, you start talking about memories, and golly, there's been a bunch. It probably would be, you know, the wildness of Demetrius Byrd coming down and that game looking like, well, they're just going to run the clock out and not get a snap off and, you know, end up throwing a touchdown pass on the last play. And that kind of defines kind of how it's been for Auburn going to Baton Rouge for the last 20 years.
A wild series. Glad we got a full preview from you, brother. Enjoy the game. Safe travels this direction.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
He's the man. That's Jason Caldwell. Again, always recommend you give him a follow on Twitter at ITATJason. The website is AUTigers.com. And how about this? For a hump day edition of B2BS, we've already had Cousin Dino and Spreadheads. We've taken you live to H-Town. I mean, a scene setter preview, boots on the ground, Chandler Rome, Astros, and Nationals. We try not to get too much into whatever it is that happened in the locker room, but I guess before this World Series and at the end of the ALCS, but always great to catch up with Chandler Rome. Ditto for our guest that you just heard from, Jason Caldwell. So a lot of fun so far on a Wednesday. Typically, Clint and I would be throwing it to Don Allen and company. Five guys, their stories, and, well, their lies. They've got a mixture of all those things. But this time around, how else would you like it? But with World Series baseball. And speaking of that, yes, you've got game two on the other side of my voice. In less than a minute, we'll throw you down to Minute Maid Park. But tomorrow, I'll be back out at the Taproom River Ranch. We are scheduled to be joined at 4:30 by Allison Footer. MLB.com, I'm very much looking forward to that interview. Yes, we're going to have Gordy Rush talking LSU football as well. And don't forget, a whole lot of high school football on our family of stations. Every game we got moved up from Friday to Thursday. That means STM Northside on 103.7 The Game. That means our Vermilion Parish Game of the Week on 106.3 Radio Lafayette. Karen Crow at Abbeville, Z105.9, Southside versus Lafayette. You could hear that one on The Rewind or on Mustang 107.1. So tomorrow, it's going to be busy, and I'll set the scene live from the Tap Room. For Clint, I'm Ben, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. World Series, up now.